This is Crosstalk, and I'm Corey Raven. Welcome to our podcast. Glad to have you. Before we start, subscribe, like, comment, tell us what the hell we're doing right, what we're doing wrong. Today, it's important to me once in a while to have somebody that is a part of my own story, my own life, somebody that I love. And today, I have such a person here. I have Henry J., who I know him and I know his family for many years, and he's got a great story, a story of recovery, something that'll inspire everybody. Better you hear from Henry. Henry, welcome to Crosstalk.
Thanks for having me. I'm glad to be here.
Yeah. I'm thrilled that you're sitting over there.
Yeah.
What an honor it is for me to have you. You came all the way down from the Capital District.
Yep.
Upstate New York, kind
yep.
of.
Yep.
And you're in New York City.
Yep.
And at the beginning of fall, we just got rid of summer. When this drops, it may be wintertime.
Yep.
You know, may not be, but it's great to have you here.
I appreciate it. Thank you for having me.
So, Henry is your name, right?
That is my name. Yes, sir. Yes, Corey. Yes, that is my name.
So, it's really good to see you.
Yep.
I love you very much.
I love you, too. It's good to finally reconnect. It's been a while.
Just start going. Just go.
Sure. Where do you want me to start?
Well, you grew up in Westchester, right?
I did, yeah.
So tell us a little bit about what it was like growing up, and I'll interrupt you.
Growing up, I was born down here in the city, and my mother and father moved me after a couple of years to Hastings. We finally relocated and settled in Bedford Hills.
And you're an only child.
Yeah, I'm an only child. My parents are baby boomers and had me late in life, so I'm lucky to be here. That being said, growing up, I was an athlete, always loved sports. My dad was a big Yankee fan, and I had always dreamed of playing professional sports.
I remember you throwing the ball, 90?
Yeah, I threw the ball pretty well, mid-80s, upper 80s, low 90s, but I ended up going to St. Peter's on a scholarship after high school. Growing up was a little challenging for sure. I never really felt super comfortable in my own shoes, but I kind of substituted not dealing with that or not knowing how to deal with that with just being an athlete and trying to make a dream come true. Wanted to play in college and ended up at St. Peter's, Westchester. I went, I was bar mitzvahed, grew up Jewish, and ended up going through high school, earning a scholarship, ended up getting to transfer from St. Peter's after a semester, going back through the junior college route and finished up at Bridgeport, where somewhat of addiction takes over and kind of derails my my love of the game and dream for playing professionally. But I would say growing up, my dad was always working. Mom was superwoman, and my dad was out helping people and providing for us. But
dad's a doctor.
He is a doctor, yeah. Very smart guy. I've never really heard anybody talk badly about him. Very honorable guy. And he was completely dedicated to his practice, which is growing up and sobering up and reflecting on it, I've come to admire and understand. It takes a certain type of person to be a lawyer or a doctor and dedicate yourself to others, but specifically as a doctor, a psychiatrist. So dealing with people at their lowest and their most complex forms of issues that they're dealing with in their lives.
And you guys connected primarily over sports.
Correct. So he was an athlete. He went to Union, which is coincidental. I happen to live two blocks from there now. And he played football there. And he kind of got me. From what I've been told, as soon as I was born, I was given a bat and a ball, and that was pretty much it. Baseball was just something that we bonded over with the Yankees and whatnot, and
I did the same thing with my son,
Yeah.
But he couldn't catch.
Sports somewhat kind of came naturally, and you start to level up and understand that there's a whole lot of people who want to do the same thing you do, but he was a very talented athlete. He was a wide receiver in college, and I believe he set certain records, which I've never really looked into, for receiving yards, touchdowns in a certain season. But it kind of transferred naturally, and I didn't really want to play football, and I kind of fell into the niche of baseball. So, yeah.
So when you said things got a little out of hand in college,
sure.
Specifically, you said addiction took over. Could you talk a little bit about that?
So my first drink was actually, I'm not even sure if anybody, my parents know it, but I was at a cousin's wedding in Texas, and I must have been somewhere between 7 and 12. I don't exactly remember. My cousin handed me a shot glass, which I thought was apple juice, told me it was apple juice, and it happened to be whiskey. And I vividly remember not being able to handle it at all. So that was my first taste, and it was always somewhat in our house frowned upon. So that was it for a while. And then right around 16, 17, I started dabbling here or there. I didn't particularly grow up with, the popular crowd or fitting in with them. I was more with athletes. And from there, 17, 18, my story kind of picks up with dabbling. But then as I get out of the house and get to college, the nerves of leaving home and not really knowing, not really understanding how to coexist. And I think a lot of only children, I think, can relate to, you kind of grow up with your parents as your best friends and not fully with the brother, sister experience, socially maturing a little bit slower. So I think alcohol became an outlet for me. And then when I first got to school, my first semester in Jersey City, it picked up a lot where they don't ID you at package and liquor stores down there. So I start dabbling Friday, Saturdays, pretty heavy with drinking. And that's where.
Had you ever been away before you went to college?
I mean, I'd been away to play baseball, but.
So you went to like a baseball camp or something like that?
Of course, yeah.
So going away wasn't exactly that big a problem. It was just adjusting to the social environment.
Yeah, just learning how to kind of exist without mom and dad, I guess. That was a challenge.
You missed them a lot when you went away?
For sure. Right. I mean, it wasn't that far looking back on it, and I could be home if I needed to in about 2 hours, but with public transit, but just a lot of anxious energy that I didn't really know at the time, like how to handle. So I substituted that with, substances, and they made me definitely calm down a little bit.
Mostly alcohol?
Only alcohol at that point. I'd smoked a little bit of weed in high school here or there, but that didn't pick up until a couple of years later. That's definitely a big part of my story for sure. A little walking chimney, if you will, a year, 2 years later down the road, that kicks off. But pretty much just malt liquor, low shelf, beer, just because that's all I could afford at the time, where, I hadn't really worked and, I hadn't really had a job going through college or going through high school because I was always playing sports and baseball. So, I had to get my hands on whatever I could.
Right.
Yeah. So, you 89-cent tall boys in Jersey City, 5, 6, 7 of those in a night and you're good to go. So, and then not really understanding, having not been taught or educated the right way to drink, I kind of drank as if, I was running track and needed water. I didn't really understand this is when it hits me or this is when I need to slow down. So 1, 2, 3. And, and also it's not talked about a lot, but athletic culture goes hand in hand with booze.
Right.
Whether it's celebrating a championship on TV in locker rooms or collegiately bonding with your teammates, which.
Any events during college that you can think of that related to drinking or drugging too much?
A couple at St. Peter's, more so towards the later years, my sophomore, junior year for sure. But I can vividly remember a couple themed parties and later towards the end of the night not doing very well and not remembering much. And that's where I sort of started having my first blackout at like 18. And when that happened, that was terrifying. So that'll keep you away from it for a week or two. And then it's like, oh, it's normal. We're going back out. We're doing our thing. So you pick right back up where you essentially left off. So I think as far as some of the early days, fall of 2014, I can remember vividly a couple themed parties here or there at off-campus houses and whatnot. So, yeah.
What's a themed party? Like a
corporate suit and tie type of event. Halloween themes, athlete themes.
Toga party?
Sure. No, not a toga party. No, we're that's a little bit.
That's Animal House.
That's in the past, yeah. Not really toga parties. That's toga. That's more Greek life, so.
Yeah.
But yeah, visiting friends, though, who are in fraternity, sure. Not toga, though, but they're a whole different animal.
Right.
So.
So you get through St. Pete,
mm-hmm.
and you transfer.
I did transfer, yeah.
And you're still playing baseball.
Yeah, yeah. I go to Dean College, and actually, for whatever reason, that was 3 hours away.
It's probably because it's more miles.
Right, right. For whatever reason, I was able to handle what I meant to say, the anxious nerves kind of subset. And part of the reason was one of my best friends, who I'm still very close with. He was actually a teammate. He was kind of going through the same transitional period with baseball from St. John's, and we linked up at Dean College. So I had him and a couple other people I'd played with younger in younger days on the summer circuits. And junior college, they actually don't drug test. So in junior college, there's a lot of marijuana, which is, you know, obviously now legal. And I didn't really pick up on any of that throughout that semester. That semester, I was pretty much straight and narrow. Couple drinking fits here or there, but nothing crazy. Probably because in the wintertime in Massachusetts, it's not very fun to be outside drinking and whatnot. But kind of kept my head down on the straight and narrow there, with minor exceptions.
Grades okay?
Yeah, no. You show up in junior college and get A's. It's not that hard, you know. But grades are okay. Never particularly struggled. I can... Towards my sophomore, junior, senior year, I can sometimes look back and go, I don't know how I passed this certain class or that class, especially because you get some exemptions as an athlete when, you know, you're going to games. But like, I remember a couple of instances of just not going, with very, very brief appearances here or there just to get by. But grades up to that point were fine. I think I'm bright, but I don't particularly think I applied myself. And looking back, if I could do it over again, I probably would have put baseball to the side and focused more on going to a good school. And I naturally have the gift of gab, which has served me a whole lot more than my business degree. Building relationships and knowing how to treat people has served me a lot better than, a concentration in finance with a BA in business. But that being said, grades were okay at that point. So
you, and then your final transfers to Bridgeport.
Yeah. So three schools in three semesters.
Hard to connect with a lot of people that way.
Well, you know, we have social media now, and it's, you know, it was blossoming at that point. So I don't particularly speak with anybody from St. Peter's that much. Just quick here and there as I see, or I see things. I had the people from Dean who I had somewhat grown up with and my best buddy who we're very close with. And then the third transfer into Bridgeport was, I'd come off of a good season and I was expecting Bridgeport to go pretty smoothly, but also in the back of my mind, I think I was very embarrassed about the expectations I had put on myself in high school and then going into a third school, that kind of weighed on the back of my mind. But I also transferred to Bridgeport as a sophomore and was living in a beach house about 15, 20 minutes outside of Bridgeport, in a small town called Milford, which is beautiful, right on the Long Island Sound. That's kind of where things pick up big time there.
So beach house meant more drinking, more partying?
Oh, yeah. For sure.
Social events.
A lot more marijuana, a lot more fall events going out in New Haven. And I had a really close buddy of mine who went to a school about 20 minutes north of me. So I could always go see him if I needed to, which I did a good amount all 3 years. And he's still a close friend to this day. So, but Bridgeport's sort of where things pick up. Didn't really gel with the coaches. And a lot of it, looking back, was my fault, not theirs. But when you're in that cloud of booze and you start picking up that cloud of weed smoke, you can't really think clearly. You think you can, or at least the way I used it. And from there, you know, going into my spring semester, which was 2016, went through a couple personal things, which I won't fully get into, but the accelerance of how much I started drinking and smoking, among other things, they kind of just started to slowly but surely take whatever confidence I had with pitching and playing the game, and just kind of I almost didn't care about it anymore. So that kind of
what year is that?
That was 20. So I get to Bridgeport in the fall of 2015, and then by the spring of 2016, I was pretty much off the rails.
And we met each other. Your mom and dad introduced me to you
around that time. They were not happy with me at that point. Yeah,
right.
But I mean, you know, I've snuck off to North Carolina with my Shipbox Camry, just lying to them a lot more. And then going back that summer, I didn't really live there. I hung out with more of my friends at the time, who I've somewhat distanced myself from now, but for personal reasons, would still, if needed, be there if they needed something from me. But you know, the way I live now and the things I'm chasing and the goals I have and the life I want, it's just, you kind of have to put it to the side. But that whole...
Can I paraphrase that?
Sure.
Balance and being comfortable being you instead of trying to be what everybody else wants you to be.
Yeah, just eliminating things that aren't particularly good for you. Not from a I hate you perspective, but more from a I need to focus on taking care of myself and going after things I, you know, need to be doing, you know, which first and foremost, yeah, balance, sure. Yeah. Balance, all of those things, but which is staying sober first and foremost, you know, a lot of people are, and I'm no different. I still have emotions of anxiety on a daily basis, anger, fear, all of those things. But like all of these things that people worry about, I have this one thing that essentially, as long as it happens, everything else somewhat keeps on taking care of itself the longer I spend. And that's staying sober. Everything else, you know, whether, you know, I acted like an asshole in the past, I was selfish towards somebody, you know, I get all the answers I need because I can think clearly, make the right decisions, own up to my side of things I contributed to that were negative, and move forward. So while all these different emotions are still, you know, and I've kind of come to terms with like, yeah, I had the alcoholism for me is not like, it's not the drinking anymore. I'm far enough away from that where if I get the craving, I know exactly where to go. But it's the thinking now. And it's really the disease of thinking.
The other thing you didn't say, which is just as important, is that you're doing a lot of good things that make you feel good. Sure. Things that you're proud of. We'll get to it, but you're very successful in business. Sure. You have a great, you know, relationship. Your people are proud of you, who love you, and that's the other side of it. Yeah, things go bad sometimes, and you know where to go for it, but you also have there's a lot of great stuff going on.
Right, and I think something that's unique is like, while all that's happening, it's like, when I have challenges, I can still remember like, when I didn't have anything, and how alone, defeated, and miserable those times were. And if I have a bad day while I'm on this side of the street, I can just look back on the other side and be like, I'm not on that side anymore. And that keeps it in perspective, which everybody can do that, whether it's alcoholism or not. But like for us, it's super important not to look back necessarily to remember how far we've come, but to remember when something is tough, when we're doing the right thing. Do you really want to be back in that area as far
as a lot worse?
Oh, exactly. Exactly.
That's bad stuff.
Exactly. I know, this way, that way, I don't know which way, but up, down, it doesn't matter. But yes.
So I want to go back. So you graduated college, no problem?
No. Definitely not no problem. I graduated college, but not no problem. Things pick up. Different substances are used. And my junior year, my sophomore year, I went through something I didn't know how to handle with, and I yapped about it. And I was looking for somebody to basically be an outlet to help me with it. And I didn't find it. I couldn't find anybody other than alcohol to help me with it. And then things really picked up. And I went back my junior year with the mindset of having this vision of myself that I was somewhat soft and vulnerable. So I was going to go back on a whole nother crazy scale that nobody was going to be able to
screw with you.
Yeah, exactly. Somewhat like, and then, you know, I'm tough, but I'm more of just, I'm crazy when I drink, man. So I kind of elevated to a level of, you know, and there's plenty of different things, but I elevated to this level of trying to essentially be not necessarily tough, but crazy to the point where I could just isolate. Like, I don't like to drink with people when I drink. I'm like George Thorogood. I drink alone, you know? So I kind of, if I were going anywhere, I just couldn't figure out my limit, but I use it somewhat as a defense mechanism or an excuse to get away from people and not have to deal with things, if you will. And in a way it worked, where some people who were just as, you know, rowdy as I could be, they liked it and they could relate. And they could understand somehow that I was going through something. But there's always that, you know, keep them at a distance type of feeling. So I don't interact with a lot of people, that I went to school with. I'm still working on making amends for sure. But from there, I had one particular night after I'd come back. Before I get to that, I ended up deciding that baseball wasn't for me anymore. I couldn't take it anymore. I'd been relegated. I actually developed the yips like Chuck Knobloch. Yeah, that was horrible.
I remember you were having trouble throwing strikes too.
Yeah, for sure. I kept getting relegated to just sitting and watching, and I just couldn't deal with that anymore. I was like, I can find something else. And then we somewhat get connected when I'm like, that something else is going to be, I'm going to go to law school. So that's how we get more intertwined and developed a relationship from the start. But you somewhat met me as I was coming off of, you know, my worst time drinking, because after getting sober, there's a 2-year phase of just going back out where fortunately there weren't a lot of consequences, because I was able to recognize I'm doing things that are just as crazy, but not getting any consequences from it. So I was able to stop right before eventually I was going to
get off the elevator at a higher floor.
Yeah. And from there, I start studying for the LSAT. But, you know, at that point, you know, I'm a pretty much habitual user. I mean, there's certain aspects of things where that fall going back, I mean, you know, I'd be drinking before workouts with our team and, you know, after. And I didn't really care. I always knew, like, this isn't how normal people do things, but I didn't really care because of what I was feeling, what I was trying to cope with. And from there, when I stopped playing, that's sort of when I really got isolated, because you're not really part of that group anymore. You interact with them once in a while because they know you were once a part of that group, but it's very clicky. You're sort of in that bubble. And what I didn't understand at the time was it was one of the most valuable things that could have taught me, which is how to be alone and deal with being comfortable when you're on your own, not having to always be socially interacting with people.
To get validated by other people.
Correct. And which is a valuable skill in my opinion. But partially that's because I don't think anybody was interested in being around me when I was in that mode. But then from there, I start studying for the LSATs. There's a couple episodes here or there. And then I had this pretty bad episode in February of 18, which was on camera, which I got to relive 2 or 3 days later. It happened on a weekend, I believe, and I got to relive it on a Monday.
Can you act it out for us?
No, definitely not.
Oh, then
definitely
tell us about
it. No, it was basically a very rowdy night of drinking and an interaction with somebody that had mouthed off to me earlier in the day before, had stuck in my brain, and I went through the entire night completely blacked out. And then there's a baseball bat involved, which naturally. And then I was essentially escorted somewhere else, and we'll keep it that way. And fortunately, I didn't have to face too many consequences. But at that point, I was removed from campus, and I had to commute every day. And I got to watch the whole event essentially on camera. It basically could have been a lot worse.
But you got a break and you graduated.
I got a break and was able to graduate. Yeah.
Right.
So from there, I'm commuting from New York to Connecticut, back down to New York, working part time in the city. But it was like one of those bottoms that I guess scares you, but you're not really looking for help. You're looking for relief, and that's a big difference of people who come in and are trying to stop.
So what happens after you graduate?
I went to law school, and I stayed sober, and that kept me.
Anything happened between then and law school that was interesting?
The summer of 2017, I was working at your firm. As far as interesting, I graduated college. Did anything happen in between? I went to rehab. Yeah.
You know, that was a good thing, right?
It was terrifying, but looking back, it was worth it for sure. Voluntarily went. That was another thing.
You know, I've never seen somebody who wanted to change the way things were more than you.
Yeah.
I think you wanted to make a change so much that we had to kind of convince mom and dad that this was a good thing to do.
Yeah, for sure.
I remember. They were perfectly compliant once they heard from you that this is something you want to do. But you really did amazing there.
Yeah. I went there with 5 or 6 months, made it through that. I think, you know, it forced me to work on myself. I didn't really have a choice. That's, you know, you're not really locked up down there, but you're forced to really peel back layers of the onion. And I think looking back, it did two things for me. It made me realize, well, this is where I'm at, and I could be completely somewhere lower than this. But also, it there's walks of all life there, and to see where you could be if you don't stop. And that was, albeit amongst some relationships I've built and still keep with certain people. But it was the best thing for me coming out of there. Was it somewhat gave me a platform for how to live. It taught me you have to have a network, and it showed me if you don't stop, you're going to get a whole lot worse. Because there are people who come in there who've been doing what I've been doing for 20, 15, 10 years. That
you remember a guy at Crossroads down there called, by the name of Big John?
No.
Big John was at every early morning meeting. Mm-hmm. And he's going
to by the way, to interrupt you, Crossroads, that place, it hasn't changed a bit.
It's amazing.
Absolutely.
You've been down there recently.
I have been down there recently. I've been there in January. I've been down there I was there at the beginning of this month. I absolutely love it. Anytime I go down there, I make sure to get down there.
It's a clubhouse for 12-step meetings. Mm-hmm. Big John, who's been down there forever, he's actually originally from up north. His wife, Kathy, are going to be guests next week.
Really?
On Crosstalk.
Awesome.
And I love what Big John says. Yeah. He says that thing about not drinking is pretty important.
Yeah.
Which probably somebody said it to him, but I love it.
Yeah.
So you learn that that's pretty important down there.
Yeah. I mean, again, just to get to see some people who go into places of rehabilitation shouldn't have the chance to go down there. Not from a perspective of they don't deserve to get better, but like the fact that they made it there is just insane. When you listen and you hear their story and you hear about things they've gone through, I mean, sure, I had issues. I still have issues. I still work on it as much as I can every day. But to hear some of the things that people either overcome to get there, and then when you see 1, 2, 3 cases, because of course there's it's not for everybody. Not everybody's not going to be able to get
death.
It.
There's all different types of illness and incarceration and loss of family and relationships. It's you see everything that, you know, it's almost like the Dickens movie, Scrooge, where he has that terrible dream where he looks at what tomorrow might look like if he doesn't change.
Yeah, and when you see one, two, three people get it, when I went down last time a couple of weeks ago, I saw somebody who I actually went with, and now that person has more time than I do, and that was just like to see just one person that I went with actually still be doing the deal. It's like, it, you know, it works. You just have to be willing to put in the work. So when you see people that have been out there battling themselves for 20 years to save myself all of that pain and all that misery, that's why I stopped again, because I knew eventually, you know.
And again, I don't want to beat a dead horse, but it's not just avoiding all the pain and misery. It's look how happy things can be.
Yeah, and how much better things get too as well.
So you go to law school.
Yeah, I go to law school.
What'd you find out there?
I've never been in a more, I don't want to say intimidating, but more pins and needles room. I mean, everybody's just trying to get through, just trying to figure it out. It just wasn't for me. And fortunately, I didn't go back out at that point. But I ended up getting a job that turned into a career. I was in a basement apartment. One of the mistakes I made was trying to do law school without living with somebody. If I could do it over again, I would have had a roommate. But I wasn't, you know, still early in sobriety, still trying to handle that. And taking on something that can be as challenging as becoming a lawyer in law school.
So how would a roommate have helped?
Just more social interaction, you know, not in a basement apartment staring up at the pipes underneath.
So you felt isolated.
Yeah. Yeah, very much so. I didn't have my car at that time, which I hadn't earned it back yet. But from there, I ended up getting to the point where I was like, this isn't for me. I kept the program pretty close, and I ended up falling into what I thought was going to be a job that turned into a career in the insurance industry. And I ended up doing really well there.
Really well.
Really well. Yeah.
And you did that for a year and a half?
No, I did that for almost four and a half years.
Okay.
Yeah.
And you did that for 4.5 years. During that time, were you sober the whole time?
No, I went back out. Yeah. So I ended up coming back down here for July 4th of 2019. And I hung out with a couple old buddies. Some of them are still my friends. Some of them aren't. And next thing I know, that evening, I'm just doing the same thing, getting shit-faced and driving and, you know.
This is after treatment.
This is after treatment, yeah.
After having some time.
After having a year and a half, yeah.
So what'd you learn from that experience?
Personally, that I wasn't ready for help. I was looking for relief at the time. And then I stayed out until 2021. As far as what did I learn from going back out?
Well, I mean, for me, when I relapsed, I had a bunch of time and then I relapsed. What I learned is that I know how it ends now. I don't have to watch the movie again.
Yeah.
And so I kind of proved to myself that the first time wasn't just an accident, wasn't a coincidence of some kind or bad karma. I know who I am and I don't need to do it anymore. That's what I learned.
I think I definitely learned that, but I think some of the bigger things that I learned, it's a really good question. I don't think I've thought too deeply into it as far as that. I've tried to forget it more so. How quickly it can happen, I think, is something that I learned. I had no intentions of having that happen. And then next thing I know, back out and running. Not at the same pace as before, not in the same way, but oftentimes more than I would have liked, similar results. How quickly it can happen and how the type of mindset that you're getting into doesn't really matter. It doesn't matter if you're angry. It doesn't matter if you're happy and you have no intentions of doing it. It can happen at any point. I think that's one of the biggest things I learned from it. So to be a little bit more guarded about staying sober. It took me 2 more years to get back.
Wow. Well, 2 years is
fortunately
a
without
long
consequences.
Time based on you being young.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's, I mean, it feels like forever when you're going through it. But given the arc of your likely life, it's a pretty lucky thing.
Yeah. Yeah.
Good event, actually, in some ways.
Yeah. 23 to 25 is a blur, for sure. You know, not every day, but again, getting back into harder substances here and there, getting back into, you know, not just beer anymore, learning how to not be able to deal with harder liquor and stuff like that, which, you know, wasn't particularly pleasant, but also not always going down the road too far, you know, but definitely spurs here or there. So,
did the experience of being in treatment and seeing that there and then relapsing afterwards, did the experience and relapse, did that stay in your mind and give you a reason to get back on the horse and get sober again?
I think so, for sure. I think I just kind of realized, like, I can't do this at the end. Like, the things I was doing, so what actually got me back in I don't know if you know the football player Henry Ruggs for the Las Vegas Raiders, killed a woman driving his Corvette 150 miles an hour.
I remember you telling me about that.
So that actually got me back in because I heard it on the radio and then watched the story at home after having been drinking and driving. And not drinking and driving 10 or 15 minutes, you know, 45 minutes, an hour, you know. And I've somewhat forgotten your question, where now I'm going off on, like, what got me back in. I think your question was about, did seeing other people in rehab get me back when I started getting bad again?
Did it give you some perspective about what tomorrow might look like if you didn't change?
I think at certain times of drinking, yes, because I was able to put one down towards the end. I could have a half or one, but eventually I thought to myself, I was an emotional drinker. Whatever I was feeling at the time when I cracked open some booze, that's how I was going to behave. So if I'm angry, it's not going to be pretty. And I started to recognize and remember, of course, seeing people coming in for different reasons when I was in treatment. You know, I think that definitely stuck with me as I, you know, was out for 2 years for sure.
So when you heard this news report, you found out that the person was killed, you just stopped cold?
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah. I don't know if that was a higher power or whatnot.
I remember you telling me about it.
That was it. I stopped cold, called somebody who's a very close family member and hit a meeting, and that was it. And that's been it since.
It's coming up on,
yeah, there you go. I spent coming up on 3 years next month.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
3 years next month. Yeah. And nothing's really changed in those 3 years. You didn't meet anybody or
everything's changed. Yeah. No, I have a girlfriend now who can tolerate me, which sometimes I can't even tolerate myself, let alone you tolerating me. I'm honest. I think I still deal with the alcoholism as far as the thinking now, as opposed to using drugs and alcohol. I've bought 2 rental properties. I've
changed careers
and, you know, thrived in the second one I'm in, which I'm now in the solar consulting field, the solar industry. And I have a different set of morals and principles, you know. So everything's changed, which, like, sometimes I'm still caught in trying to get to the next level all the time.
What does that mean? You mean that the economic level?
Economic level, personal level, physical level, as far as getting into better shape, everything. I'm trying to do better, chase more things as far as accomplishments. But, like, it's only been 3 years. It's crazy. And it's been the slowest and fastest 3 years of my life. But it's very weird.
It's actually very wise.
Yeah. You think so?
Yeah.
Why is that?
Because
am I Confucius?
time is a really interesting thing. It's the most valuable thing that, we have. And things go really fast. But if you think of all the stuff that's happened to you in those 3 years, it's probably the most significant things that have happened in your life, all packed into this 3-year period. So, you know, it is fast. And the wonderful thing is that from the perspective of where you are age-wise and in your career and in your relationship, it's really nice to think that it's all in front of you. And now you've given yourself the ability to have a life that you don't have to worry each day as to whether or not you're going to end up like that football player or maybe the lady that the football player killed. You're going to have a long life. You're going to have a healthy family, and you're going to be able to be a dad to kids that are going to have a dad that's present, that's emotionally available, that's has wise advice to provide. It's really great to have it all in front of you.
Yeah. One day at a time. Yeah. I mean, I think I'll get there. Keeping it one day at a time.
Yeah. You're there, actually.
Which I hated when I first came in, because I was trying to do it at 20, 21, but it doesn't almost feel, it almost doesn't feel real.
You know, there's a picture on the board of a Sober Today club in South Florida, which says there's a pill that can cure addiction. I hear there's a pill that can cure addiction. I wonder what two of them will do.
You and your sayings and whatnot. Yeah, I love it. There you go. Yeah, I think when you bring up this point, like, what getting clean has helped me do is kind of put into perspective of, like, you know, whether I didn't accomplish certain things in my past because of addiction. There's really no limit as long as you just stay sober. Like a drunken alcoholic is about as useless of a person as can be. But when you get sober, if you're willing to do the work, there's not much we can't do from any level of anything that humans are doing on a day-to-day basis.
There is a reel if I've ever seen one.
Yeah. That,
can you predict a reel while you're saying
I guess so, yeah.
You just did it.
Yeah.
Amazing.
All the slogans, all that stuff. I don't know how they became something that I follow so much every day. But if you like that reel, there you go.
It becomes part of you, the whole thing. It just, that's the way you're living. It just becomes something. And then everything that we tell other people is stuff we heard from somebody else.
Yeah. And to your point about the last 3 years, it hasn't come just because of myself. I've built up a good network of people upstate that I can call on if I have an issue. I go to meetings. I do the work. For the most part, I know when to get to a meeting when it's been too long, which, you know, that's how it slowly starts to taper off and you start to pick up those old habits. I'm able to self-identify now when I am acting in a certain way that is not, that can be detrimental to what I need to do, which is stay sober. So, you know, giving myself time, just giving myself time, has been life-changing.
Relationship with your mom and dad is good?
Yeah. Me and my dad, I don't talk a lot about the relationship with my dad a lot, but it was definitely strained for a very long time. Very little of that time was from him, and a greater portion of that time was my own doing. I always identified that I have to do things to live up to his
expectation.
I don't know about his expectation, but his shoes, you know. And I don't even know if he did anything to contribute that mindset. I've just watched the way he was talked about, the way he carried himself before he ended up getting sick, and through certain people talking to me about it and telling me don't have any regrets, I've been able to bury that hatchet. He's sick now. He's in a very good place though, but he and I are much more compatible with each other now, and I've kind of eliminated that expectations and stopped trying to be his son and trying to just be myself. So that took a while for sure. As far as my mother, you know, my mother, that'll be a tough day when she's no longer with us. But it's always been love with my mother. So, and it took a while to recognize in a cloud of addiction for me, but yeah. It took me until about 23, 24 to start realizing how much love a mother has for their son, daughter, and whatnot. So now looking back on that, I wouldn't say me and my dad we're at a great place, but me and my mother, whatever she needs, I'll always be there for her. And same with my father, but she's a special woman.
So Henry, you're now able to talk to little Henry.
Mm-hmm.
If you were going to give Henry advice,
mm-hmm.
now that you have the wisdom that you do at your age, what would you tell young Henry to give him some help along the way?
I would tell young Henry not to fall in love with the result, fall in love with the process, and the results will take care of themselves. And I would tell young Henry, don't get too high on the mountain or get too low in the valley, and figure out a way to take the straight and narrow path that's going to be somewhat on the even keel. Don't get too high with your emotions. Don't get too low with your emotions. Those are two things I would tell.
The middle's a good place.
Middle's a good place. Be where your feet are.
I like that.
Yeah.
I've heard that before.
You've taught me that. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. By the way, not that this is a commercial break, but that's a song by Jason Mraz.
Correct.
So if anybody hasn't heard that song, now might be a good, well, not now, when this is over. Now he sings some great stuff. Our theme song for our podcast is by one of his best friends, Gregory Page, who gave us permission to use the song Green Lights and Blue Skies.
Mm.
I played that for you. So last question.
Mm-hmm.
What's a question you wish people would ask you?
Wow.
Or inquire about or dig in more often when you're speaking to people? What would you like them to ask you about you?
I would probably like people to ask me. I don't think I would like people to ask me a question. What I would like to be able to have people do is come to me and say, this is what I'm really going through. Henry, what can I do to make a difference and get over this hump? I don't want to be asked the question. I want to be thought of as somebody that people can come to ask for advice on dealing with something that is crisis mode and how they can get over it and deal with it. And I want people to view myself as somebody who can help them when they're dealing with their darkest day.
And what you just did is define who you are.
Yeah.
You're,
is that what I did?
You did.
I thought maybe deflecting, but no, I'm kidding.
There was no deflecting there. The question itself isn't as important as what it stirs up in us. And what it stirred up, it seems to me, is that you want to help others. You want to give back, and you want to matter to other people. And you do.
Yeah. I think.
You matter to me.
Yeah, I appreciate it. I appreciate it. You matter to me as well. I love you very much. But I think that's what I would want. Not for people to ask me questions, for me to be able to answer theirs. So that would sound like a good goal. Yeah.
Anything you want to talk about that we haven't covered?
Yeah, I think in people who are still out there struggling, don't get too far away from the meetings. Don't get too far away from your sponsor. If you're really serious about it, you know, this is a wonderful way to live. The longer amounts of time that you put together, you know, there's nothing really that you need to be worried about. You know, how many times have I called you worrying about something and you've told me it's not going to happen and then it doesn't happen? And life doesn't end when you get sober. It starts, you know. I think that's something I want to get out there to people. Don't worry about when it is that you get sober, especially for young people. There's a lot of young people struggling out there. There's a lot of other things that are killing people when it comes to this disease. And addiction is a real bitch, if you will. And, you know, if you think you have an issue, go talk to somebody. You know, you might not be ready to stop, but as long as you start to get your head around not what you're in for on the pain side, but what you're in for on when you make the decision to switch, you're going to be all right. So I think that's something I'd like to get out there.
It's a great bow on a really cool time I'm spending here with you. It was really nice to do this together.
Yep.
And it really puts a highlights the idea that things get better if you just are patient with yourself.
Yeah, for sure. Took too long. I should have been here sooner. So
you know what?
Yeah.
You're here.
I am. Yeah.
Thank you.
Yes, absolutely. Love you. It was a pleasure to be here.
Thanks for doing this. And thanks for watching Crosstalk. We'll see you next time.